everyone, and welcome back to episode 10 of the Collaboration Chronicles. This is Mitch Greenfield, joined by my co-host Nick, and we're really excited to have Tony with us again today to share some of his experiences. So Tony, why don't you just introduce yourself to our audience?
Thank you, Mitch and Nick. My name is Tony Themelis. I'm a product manager in the Microsoft Information Protection Group. So I work at Microsoft. I've been there for 2 years. And my team is responsible for classification, labeling, and protection as it is applied in all the Microsoft applications, features, and services.
So I think you've really kind of made this case of labeling and data sensitivity and using sensitivity. How do you see that as kind of a cornerstone, right? I think you've made the case that data sensitivity is really the cornerstone of a DLP program. If I am classifying data at creation or edit anytime I'm touching it, and that is staying with the data, persisting with the data, then all of my ancillary technologies that are my gateways, my sharing tools, my egress tool of any kind, right, make them aware of reading the labels, and then stop rescanning. Don't rescan, don't use different dictionaries, don't use different taxonomies, don't use different policies, don't overmanage. And I think that is still something that is lost on a lot of people, because I think people view still classification and data protection as two separate things, when they're really, they're really complementing each other, right? Because if I classify, then my protection is based on that classification instead of re-scanning content.
Yeah, I mean, I love what you're saying, and I can tell you that internally, the question is, what is DLP? Is DLP MIP? Is DLP different to MIP? Is CLP, classification, labeling, and protection, and DLP? Well, no, it's all MIP. MIP is a unification of the life cycle, right? Classification, labeling, protection, and DLP all need to come together. And so we're working on unifying on the back end the technology stacks that drive those, and on the administrator side, the interfaces, so that they're not different, so that they're more coherent over time.
If the sensitivity label becomes the crux, essentially, that triggers all sorts of additional policies down the road with Microsoft or partner technologies, as Mitch said, one of the key things for the ecosystem working is making sure that label is always up to date, in terms of what's there. So two questions. One, a little bit going back to the default label. When you can apply the default label, when the default label gets applied, does it also trigger an auto classification, or is it just going to be a default label, period, for the doc? If an auto classification policy exists, does the application of a label also trigger the potential evaluation of an auto classification policy?
The one doesn't trigger the other. Like the default label will trigger on a file open, mm-hmm. for example. Classification. Okay. Yeah. Will trigger separately depending on the scenario. Like if a user is editing a document, then it'll happen as they're typing, right? In real time, it'll be detecting sensitive information,
yeah.
or it might be data at rest, right? And in a data at rest scenario, there'll be an evaluation that says, oh, is the detection resulting in the same label or a different label? And if it's a different label, then it might be upgraded. But they're different.
So, for example, I love the feature that you mentioned that if a site has a label, you're going to make the default label of the document uploaded into that site that label, right? If it doesn't have one, again, will that potentially also result in an auto label evaluation, or that again is going to be something that happens off of some other trigger?
The auto label will be triggered separately. But clearly, the two need to work coherently together, right? Because you start putting the default on, and then you enhance that with the auto label, depending on the additional trigger. you know, the default label will trigger, for example, and it's not available yet, but we are working on it. The site default label will trigger based off of the location, the site. Then the order label policy will come in afterwards and look at whatever it is, the contents of the file, for example, and make a determination whether that should be different.
Okay. Now, as you look to use it for DLP and other reasons and other partners look to use it, whether that label is current and up to date may be important in certain scenarios and actions. But if there isn't today a way to sort of almost make a call or an API call that says, hey, there's a label, but is it current? You know, has it gone, you know, is this the most current correct label before I make a decision to, send it to the outside, let it go, you know, whatever. Is there going to be some mechanism, or is there some mechanism for, you know, DLP or another system to say, hey, it has a label, but
triggers for that today. You know, one of the things that we always have to consider is the scale at which we operate, which is basically we have to do this for, mm-hmm. you know, hundreds of thousands of tenants, right? And so the case mm-hmm. for reevaluating the label has to be considered carefully. And really, really, we need to focus on doing it when it's needed, as opposed to doing it all the time, which we just can't mm-hmm. do, right? It's not a scalable thing. And so, so doing it when it's needed is something that we absolutely focus on. So, for example, it'll be reevaluated in the cloud when files are moved or copied, or when they're opened and edited. Then the label is reevaluated. We do interestingly have the notion of a manual label versus an auto label, right? And the question becomes, which one trumps the other, right? And like if a user puts on a manual label on a file, then should that be privileged over a system potentially triggered label or not? And right now, our principle is that the manual label always trumps the system label, right? And that is an interesting one because a lot of customers are saying, well, what about a malicious user? What about if somebody goes and downgrades the label? What if I actually want a different principle and I want the system to override the user? And so we are actually thinking about how we give customers the choice which way to go on the two. So coming back to the reevaluation of the label today, if it's a manual label, we're never going to reevaluate it because we consider it to be privileged because it was applied by a user.
So what is a default label application considered? A manual, or is it considered a calculated label?
Calculated.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a special case because it has to be, right?
The system's doing it, not the user.
Right. It's not the user.
So when the calculation occurs, it'll be overridden.
That's exactly right. But we are thinking about, like, how do we improve on the system versus default label, and whether we put more granularity there for sure.
I'll give you my 2 cents. Actually, I'm not gonna. It's not my idea. For those viewers, go look at episode 7. This is Chuck's idea. It's his concept. But I think he's right on this, which is labeling will never be perfect. It'll always be off, right? So assume in your enforcement model, right, that you built in an emergency relief valve situation, assuming there's going to be an error message, right, there's going to be an error factor in terms of what's there. So don't ever try to get labeling perfect. You never will. It's sort of a losing battle. But be on the conservative side, you know, when you come up with the labeling, but have your controls. When you apply controls, make sure those controls have some sort of, you know, override or temporary override capability or some way to sort of provide a flexibility that gives the user owner the flexibility to make, on the fly decisions. While holding them accountable.
So you know, we spent some moments here talking about auto classification, and I think that's a principle that I want to just go a little more in depth on. I've had a lot of conversations with folks that still believe user classification is better than automated classification. I'm kind of the opposite camp. I'm skeptical. I don't trust people. So, you know, what's kind of the take on that for Microsoft? And I don't know if there's any, you know, future of where things are headed in terms of auto classification that will convince people, you know, it's the path to take.
Yeah. And I again, I love what you're saying because it's so close to my heart. The team that I work with is just obsessively focused with building a best world-class classification service. It's like we live and breathe it all day, every day. And I think that, you know, there are scenarios where user-based classification is the most accurate because who better, right, to know what's going on than the user? But you're also subject to all of the human like deficiencies and fallacies that come together with forgetting to do it or, you know, not doing it right for whatever reason or making a mistake. There could be lots of reasons why this happens. So where we are is that we want to be able to give our customers the choice to go the manual route, but also to coherently layer on top of it automated classification. And when it comes to automated classification, it has to be best of breed, right? There's no question about it. And it has to be as accurate as it possibly can be. And we've made enormous investments to get to that point. And I'll give you some examples. So the first example is we've upgraded our sensitive information types. We had about 100 of them. We've now got close to 300 sensitive information types that are much improved. All the good things, social security numbers, credit card numbers, global scope, driver's license, cover, you know, the things that are required to cover, ranging from, you know, Far East, Japan, my number, Europe, GDPR, and all of that. We've also added the ability to clone and edit the sensitive information types, right? So that they can be, customers can take them and can adjust them to their needs. Next thing we've done is we've added named entity recognition. So support for person names, drug names, medical terms and conditions, addresses, that sort of thing, which we didn't have before, which gives us a much better capability together with sensitive information types to increase the accuracy of detection. For customers, especially in healthcare, right, that need to know that their specific numbers are the ones that are matched, not any generic number, we've added exact data match. And in fact, I think Forrester gave us really good credit on our exact data match capability, that it's equivalent to competition now. We've made a big investment to do that. And then lastly, what we're doing is we're integrating machine learning into MIP. So we built a machine learning platform that allows customers to train machine learning models based on categories of documents that mean something sensitive to them. And then given those machine learning models, then what you can do is you can actually use those to trigger labels. And you can use those to trigger labels everywhere. So in Exchange, in OneDrive, in SharePoint, on endpoints, we're building the capability that's going to be delivered by Ignite in September this year. So given that we end up with a system being much more accurate than it used to be, now the question of manual versus auto labeling becomes very interesting, right? Because if you're really, really good at accurately detecting, and we give our customers all of the tools, and by the way, we also have a research data scientist and a research group, and the research group is dedicated to taking all of our sensitive information types and the signals that we get from our customers and continuously improving them and making them better. So it's like, and that's the great thing about being in the cloud, right, is that you can bring all of this technology to bear and make it available to everyone. So I think that discussion is going to evolve in between manual versus auto. And I do expect there's going to be a time where the auto is really accurate, and therefore more trustworthy, right, than the manual.
Do you ever see, I'm working with a customer right now, and they have CUI and ITAR concerns. The current strategy is to basically use contextual labels, right, or container labels to try to sort of have those things applied and to some degree human labels. The nice part, and you know, given your background, Brad, you know, we knew that ITAR data and typically CUI data always sit in repositories that are fairly easy to identify, right? As a gross sort of repository in terms of what's there, not necessarily that this is an ITAR document and this not, but this repository contains ITAR documents. Therefore, anything coming out of it potentially is an ITAR document. Do you see the ML stuff ever being good enough to get to that level of sort of document detection, or is that a bridge too far?
Unquestionably, it's capable of doing that.
Really?
Oh yeah. I think there's no question in my mind that it is. It's interesting you bring up CUI because we've actually been looking at CUI really closely as well.
Really?
Yeah, and looking at, you know, the dynamic nature of the CUI marking and how we extend MIP labels to actually support that. It's not something that we have on our very, very short-term roadmap, but it's something that we're looking to evolve to. And our federal customers are asking us to do that. So we are looking at that as well.
This is a commercial customer struggling with federal regulations.
Oh, yeah, well, there's a lot of them actually that are in that as well.
So if you want a beta customer or a volunteer, I got a good one for you because they're very progressive in their thinking. They're trying to sort of leapfrog, sort of saying they're going from landlines to 4G type of
right.
thing.
Right.
And they're very sort of open about it. But we're definitely struggling with that one in terms of sort of approaching it.
Yeah, I think you know to the point of what is a label and how extensible is a label and how multidimensional is a label. If you look at our labels today, they're really a one-dimension list of labels, right? We're actually investing a lot right now in extending the attributes that can be associated with a label so that you can do a lot more things, not only access control, but you can provide, you know, a label from a certain division or a certain geolocation or a certain attribute that maybe defines something about denying access. For example, it might be a training, an attribute with respect to training that'll go and check with a third-party system and say, hey, has Nick completed his training? If not, you can't have access to this document, right? And so that is actually, there's an initial private preview in the second half of this year of that. Because I think the notion of classification, right, is more than, it's not just one thing. In other words, a document may be sensitive, but there may be different attributes to that sensitivity of a document that further define it. And that's part of our roadmap and our journey. And it's obviously a multi-team effort. It's a cross-Microsoft effort. It has Azure Active Directory involved and other folks. And that's super exciting because I think, you know, if you think about our investments in classification, we were just talking about, and machine learning and bringing all of that, the ability to extend the label taxonomy and architecture to be more dynamic than what it is today with attributes and CUI and that sort of thing is really the vision of where we're trying to take this. And like I, you know, the theme is we're on a journey, right?
I think that's great. One piece of advice is I would, the word label is so overloaded with meaning. So when you talk to compliance people, when you talk to, like, I just got pretty much a lecture on, you know, what ITAR compliance means when it comes to labeling. and, you know, the different entities and government regulations. Is it DOC? Is it Department of Defense? Is it Department of Commerce? What's the export control rule? And the labels, basically, I realized for the first time in years, those labels eventually map to a specific law, to a specific section, to a specific subtitle in terms of its compliance, right? And what governance it essentially falls under, right, in terms of what's there. And if it's under export control, again, you know, chapter verse basically referring back to regulations that's very useful and requires, you know, to sort of meet your obligations, you know, to DOD or to whoever for the ITAR requirement, it's totally useless for enforcement, right? In terms of what's there, it's too granular in terms of what's there. You're not going to be able to leverage it in that way. Which goes back to your point, which says, you know, there are sensitivity labels, which I think are going to be useful, as we talked about, for control or information routing options, right? We're routed to this and routed to this. And then I view the second level tags that you're talking about as sort of potentially input parameters into the control function itself, exactly. Right?
Yeah.
So you're going to end up in DLP and under this policy, and this policy takes into it, have you been trained, right? Or I don't know, something like that in that environment. And then essentially you have, you know, true data-centric policies, right, that follow not just the classification of the document, but other, I don't know. My point is, call them something else. Come up with a good name. You guys are good at naming stuff, but try not to overload, you know, sensitivity label. Call them a tag, call them something else, because I think people's minds are going to blow up. It's already, I'm already challenged in terms of, like, people like I was talking about that had that level of definition of classification going like, okay, can you give me like three buckets, right? No. There's like 1,000 of them. Like, no, I know, but can you sort of think about aggregating them into a handful of buckets? Because we can't expect people to know 3,000 buckets, yeah, right? Exactly. So exactly. Is there a way to sort of, you know, nor can you write policies for 3,000 buckets, exactly. Right? Like, you know, can you think of it that way? And you know, eventually, I think I broke him down. He's like, well, let me think about it. I think maybe we can do 4. And I'm like, all right, 4 is good. Starting point. Because it's important that there's a taxonomy and a hierarchy and that you don't sort of degrade back to, you know, not to pick on the old sort of Titus days and Bolden James, where, you know, they were doing DOD level classification that no human being or commercial entity could possibly follow. And at the end of the day, they were only good for reporting, right? You couldn't really act on them. They were too granular. So it really wasn't worth the investment. So I think, you know, Microsoft's done a great job at sort of pushing, make it simple, keep it few, you know, more than 4, 5, or 6, you know, blah, 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 so that it's manageable. And I think it's great that you're doing this extension, but try not to say, oh, great, so now we're going to go back to 1,000. No, and
you know, if that's where we end up, it's not a good thing, right? We totally have to keep it simple. And I think that we our principle is, how do we embrace the complex environment of our customers and yet keep the solution as simple as possible? And, you know, we work on that every day, right? That's what we do. But I do think that the notion of the labels being few and simple and easy to understand is just so foundational to everything.
What is the, can you share what is the classification that Microsoft itself uses internally?
Yeah, it's actually been on a journey. And we ended up having the highest level is highly confidential. The second one down is confidential. And the reason why we did that was because I think before, the highest one wasn't highly confidential. It was like secret. And we found that there was confusion amongst users of the difference between secret and confidential. Right? Like which one is actually more higher, right? Is it the secret one or the confidential one? And so what we ended up doing is saying, well, let's use the same term confidential and just qualify the one and say highly confidential. So it's obvious that this is the most, the highest one. And then we have general. And then if I remember correctly, we have public.
We have 4.
So we have 4. Yeah, I think actually there's 4 or 5. Obviously, we have different sub categories. Like, for example, our executive leadership team has a label that's only published to them, which enables them to use everything, right? Containers, SharePoint sites, files, emails that end up being scoped only to that limited group of people. And there are some other like highly sensitive groups that have their own labels applied to them. But the general four or five labels are the ones that are applied to everybody. And then there's additional ones applied for additional scoping to certain groups.
And do you have a default label?
Absolutely, we have a default label. Yes.
What is it?
The default is the general.
Is it
the general? Yeah. Okay. Default is the general. Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, I think on that, let's call it a show. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Collaboration Chronicles. We really appreciate Tony and his time today. And let us know what you thought. So comment. And don't forget to follow us. If you don't like looking at us, it's okay. You can listen to our audio podcast at podcast.mycollaborationchronicles.com and listen to us on Apple Music, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Thanks.